Can't sell it anywhere else, man. It's right here in West Virginia.
This is the Community Podcast with Zach Beard and Aaron Marco, two Morgantown real estate agents highlighting the good people of our city and state. We're taking you behind the sign, connecting interesting people, places, and faces, why they do what they do, and how they came to be doing it. We're building a better community. Well, Aaron, we always start this off. We've got some real estate world stuff going on. You had a rough week.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know how much I want to admit on things, but yeah, you know how it is. Zach. You know, trying to manage, you're managing a lot of processes going on. There's a lot of dates. You got to make your dates. And there's a lot of information. Here's a rule. Write it down.
Well, and I think the most important thing, I mean, maybe it's not the most important, but it's maybe one that's not as obvious all the time, is that you're not just, you know, every job is dealing with problems and solving problems, you know, but a lot of times in this real estate stuff too, you can never take the people out of the equation, which means you can never take the emotions out of the equation for what, you know, how you try to navigate the waters a little bit. And that's maybe what the toughest part about it too, is trying to navigate everybody's emotions, especially when they're stressed.
And it is. And, you know, at the end of the day, you know, when you're someone's agent, you want to please them at the end of the day. In fact, it's your fiduciary duty to make sure they're satisfied at the end of the process. And if there is a hiccup somewhere along the lines, you do take that personally. You feel a little guilty about those kind of things. And, you know, look here, if you're an agent, you know, you're going to have these kind of things come up. And hopefully there's always a way around it, you know.
Exactly right. I just think it's important not to forget, though, that we're always dealing with people. And
I say it all the time. People do people things, man.
People do people things. That's right.
And,
you know, we get tied up, though, and worried about, you know, what's going to happen with Milan, what's going to happen with X, Y, or Z. Our guest today, he made a comment, and I wrote it down. He said, the most valuable resource in Morgantown, however, is its citizens. And it's, again, it goes back to the people. And how you treat them, how they treat you in return.
And that's a great statement. I've heard that quote as well, and I think that's fantastic. So today we have the current chief of police, Eric Powell, with us today to talk to us a little bit about, you know, some of the what's going on in the world of policing here in Morgantown, as well as some tips and kind of things to keep in mind headed into the holiday season. Eric, how you doing today?
Good. How are you?
It's really great to have you here.
Glad to have you, for sure.
It is really cool to have you sitting down here.
I'm glad to be here.
So, Eric, tell me a little bit, how long have you been the chief of police now in Morgantown?
Well, I was appointed chief April of this year. Prior to that, I was interim chief. I served in that capacity from June of 2020 up until April when I was appointed. And prior to that, I was the deputy chief.
That's what I thought. So you had been in that kind of pipeline for quite some time under Ed Preston through there.
Yeah.
So overall in the department, has it been more than 20 years?
24.
24, wow.
24 as of 11/3, so the third of this month was my 24th anniversary.
Which is actually a great story. I mean, that's a great story. You grew up here in Morgantown, right?
Yeah, born and raised with the high school, Morgantown High, class of 86. Suncrest Junior High before it was Suncrest Middle, back in the olden days. And yeah, I lived for a brief while in Charleston and for a brief while in Raleigh, North Carolina, but I came home and this is where
that's an often told story, yeah. Right there. You know, what brought you back?
Well, actually, it was more for my grandparents. My grandfather had passed away while I was still in undergraduate school in Charleston. And when I graduated, my grandma was up here all by herself. And there wasn't really a lot of close family members. And I felt, you know, they'd taken a lot of good care of me growing up. And so I came up here sort of for that purpose, trying to maybe help her out.
That's a great story in and of itself right mm-hmm. there. So you ended up going into policing. What drew you to policing?
Well, I did get my undergraduate degree in criminal justice. And, you know, I think when I was young, I had a goal. Well, I actually started my undergraduate studies at WVU, and I was really wanted to be a fighter pilot. That was my dream. I wanted to be in the Air Force, and I was in the Air Force ROTC during my whole time. I was here up to my junior year here. And that kind of, I'm a kind of a tall guy. If you haven't noticed, I'm about 6 foot four.
I definitely noticed.
That's one hindrance to actually being in a fighter plane,
fitting in the cockpit.
Right. And, yeah. and so when I started seeing that my options were going to be pretty limited, you know, I kind of shifted directions and I, you know, kind of did a reevaluation of the things that I wanted to do. And you know, when you're a kid, what do you want to do? You want to be, a policeman. I want to be a fireman. You know, you want to be the,
my grandson says it now. I want to be a police officer.
It's like that hero thing. So, you know, I thought, you know, I always kind of thought I'd be a good police officer. So I sort of set my sights on that and sort of geared the rest of my undergraduate towards achieving that goal.
Well, that's great. It's a tough job, man. I mean, it's a tough job, especially nowadays, to, you know, to be a police officer.
Yeah. It's not only is it difficult physically, it does take a really a toll on you psychologically and emotionally. There's a lot of things that a police officer experiences during the course of just doing their job that are traumatic. And
they experience it on a regular basis. It's a recurring kind of thing. Yeah, and I think a lot of people lose sight of that.
Right, and it wears on you after a while, definitely.
It has to. I mean, it just absolutely has to. I was having a conversation with my pastor actually earlier this morning. We were having breakfast, and you know, and I think about him in many ways as a pastor, always dealing with some level of human strife. You know, there's deaths and there's problems, and you know, and a pastor wears a lot of that, and you have to walk through that constantly. I think that a lot the same with policing, that you're constantly in this cycle of experiencing these kind of difficulties that humans go through on, you know, as an individual, I may experience that very infrequently over a period of time, but I think as an officer, you have to be exposed to that quite a bit.
Oh, definitely. But, you know, the flip side to that is there are some real payoffs. You know, it's sometimes at the end of the day, you can leave going back home knowing that you had a really positive impact on somebody's life and you really helped somebody, and which is why you get into it in the first place, is to help people. That's the goal, and to really make a difference in your community and your fellow man. And I think there are times when you can walk away saying, you know, feeling good about what you've done and feeling good about your profession. So there are those moments.
So you're saying that you don't get into it for the money?
Yeah, that's
what you're saying. Are there any stories you're allowed to share without saying names?
About?
Of some stories that have stuck with you over the years, you know, why you got into it, and maybe they remind you of why you...
I can't think of any off the top, but I can tell you that anytime you find a missing kid, that makes you feel good. Anytime you can reunite a missing child with somebody, you know, I was involved for a large part of my career in criminal investigation. I was a detective, and what you got your satisfaction at the end of the day. You know, I'm kind of I like to think of myself as a puzzle solver, sort of. I'm really it's kind of my thing. So I really enjoyed at the end of the day, if I was able to make a really strong, solid case against somebody I knew was really doing bad or really being harmful, and I knew, you know, I was going to be able to make a strong case against and take them out of society for a period of time where they couldn't hurt people. You know, that's a big thing.
That's got to be satisfying.
Yeah. And you know, I had a case that involved the sexual assault of a couple of very young children by a person that mother had put a lot of trust and faith in. And that took a lot of work. And at the end of the day, all the hard work paid off. And it made, you know, what makes me feel good is when someone like a mom who has a kid that's a victim of something comes up to you and says, "Thank you so much. This is a weight off my shoulders. I'm so happy that this person's being brought to justice." And making sure that those kids have a more safe
It takes a special person, too, to be able to organize the emotions that you would go through, just having to deal with all of it and put it together and make sure you get it right. Yeah, that's a lot to weigh on you, even.
Oh, yeah. And this is what I always tell people, you know, police officers, whether they be male or female, are they're fathers and mothers and sisters and brothers. They have their own, they're people just like anybody else. And they're dealing with the same problems in their personal life as anyone else would. And so I think sometimes that kind of gets forgotten about a little bit. People don't, they see them only in this role, and they kind of overlook the fact that, hey, you know, there's other things going on there. So, you know, it's nice to be able to try to at least educate people or remind people.
Sure. And I've talked to a few people too, friends and stuff. And, you know, you see a police officer standing in line at sheets, and you kind of try to make conversation with them. But there's some people who see that cop, and, you know, maybe they think they're going to think if you approach them, well, you're guilty of something. So better not go talk to that guy.
Right. Right.
And I think there's always that weird stigma that sticks with us even as.
Yeah. I think, to a degree, I think that we sometimes as officers get into sort of that mode too, which we kind of put off that air of unapproachability. And because, you know, we have to maintain a certain level of wariness and have our guard up a lot,
yeah,
because you never know who you're dealing with at any point in time. So that can probably contribute to that hesitancy, but
because people read that. I mean, right. we're all pretty good at reading each other, you know, and you can read that a little bit. I think a lot of the, you know, policing has certainly changed over the years. You know, a lot of times, you know, the police officer was very well known to the community he was serving. He kind of walked around in the community, people knew him and this and that. And then there was maybe a growing void of familiarity between the people that are policing in the area, you know, and the citizenry themselves. And so there wasn't really that great connectivity between them. Have you seen any movement back towards some of that, you know, the community policing kind of model?
Yeah. Definitely. I think it's certainly something that's out there, and it's been around for a while. And, you know, and like almost anything, the profession, it evolves constantly, and lots of things have impacts and influence that evolution, like what you're referring to, going away from sort of the beat guy out on the street all the time and being, you know, approachable and being there. You know, once patrol cars started getting involved, and once, you know, technology started getting involved, and there was more of a isolation thing going on with the police, where they were spending a lot of times in their vehicles, cruising around, not getting out. So, but it's headed back towards, you know, right now the shift with community policing is places a very high priority on building relationships within communities and individuals, getting to understand what specific problems a person's having in their community, and also communicating back to those people what we're seeing as a department that's going on in the community, so that they're aware and more able to identify when something's going on and let us know when it's happening.
I got to think the benefit's really a two-way street.
It is. Sure. Mean, it really is.
Well, look at that Brian Laundrie case. You know, without social media essentially giving clues all along the way, that could have been a little bit different.
Right. Right.
No doubt.
Yeah. Do you see anything like from social media, even local here, like helping or being a negative?
It sometimes is a positive. It sometimes is a negative.
It goes both ways again.
Because I think people have sort of fallen back a little bit too much and become a little too reliant on it. Because I've noticed that there's this tendency to, once it's on social media, well, that's I've done my part. I've let people know what's going on social media. But the problem is, you know, it's not always communicated to us because of whatever group that might be privy to the information,
right?
We're not included in on it. So, you know, I always get frustrated when somebody will call me or send me an email saying, well, why didn't you deal with this problem? You know, this has been on Facebook for a week now and nobody's done anything about it. And I'm like, well, this is the first I've heard of it. So, you know, I don't know what to tell you, except maybe next time, instead of putting it on Facebook,
call the police.
Call the police, yeah. Yeah. So, Aaron, I know one thing you wanted to kind of highlight was getting into the holidays and looking at some safety there. I think another avenue we could maybe approach too is, you know, as realtors, we're supposed to be the source of the source of the source, never the source of that information is, but we do get clients who come to us and say, you know, what do you think about this neighborhood? In our example is to point them to the source. So as a source of that information of giving somebody information about a safe neighborhood, what are some avenues people can go, or, you know, I guess ways they can find out about that information?
Well, here in Morgantown, there is a very prolific and very robust neighborhood community organizations for each individual neighborhood, and they all meet regularly on a monthly basis. The schedules for their meetings, I think they're just now rolling back into in-person meetings, but the schedule is on the city website. If you get on it and do a couple of quick clicks, it'll take you directly to which specific neighborhoods having a meeting, which specific day. You know, it'll be something like the first Monday of every month, the third Wednesday, or whatever. But I think almost, I'm pretty sure all of the neighborhood associations are all represented in some way as far as being meeting.
So now, what's a neighborhood association? That's different from an HOA.
Yeah, it's just a group of people that get together and discuss issues within the neighborhood. You know,
and I see them on social media, yeah, on Facebook. Yeah. You know, Greenmont neighborhood community, various. You know, every neighborhood kind of has that community group that's going on, and that's kind of a good idea. You know, to point potential clients towards those groups to kind of either sit in or at least get some contact with them to get an idea of what the neighborhoods and the people that are in the neighborhood.
And what's really cool about them is just not only the police department, but citywide department-wise, the city engineer, if there's going to be something going on with respect to changing, a road or paving or construction or something that's happening, usually they're invited to a meeting so that they can discuss it with the neighborhood and maybe explain things and give dates when things are going to be, sort of blocked off or sure. Whatever. And so we've the street department represented at these meetings, when they're asked. At just about every meeting, a police officer is there to give a police report for that community, specifically geared towards, hey, this is what happened in your community over last month. And this is the areas that were, you had so many car break-ins or you had so many.
Are those reports saved for a period of time that? If my buyer John Smith calls in and says, "Hey, I was thinking of moving over to here."
Well, it depends on the status of the report and its availability. So, if somebody files a report of a burglary, say, and it's still under investigation, we don't make those available to the public. But if something's kind of closed out because of lack of leads or lack of information, we might give that information out. But strictly speaking, it's mostly just statistical information. It's like you had this many. Car break-ins, and we might even get into the details of on these specific streets between these specific hours, so that people are kind of aware of what to look for.
Yeah, just maybe reminders to lock your doors.
Right.
Do certain. Yeah.
How is the trajectory of those various kind of crimes currently in Morgantown?
Right now, they're pretty. I want to say that they're trending down for the most part for the time being. Morgantown's a kind of a funny place with statistics and trends because
population changes.
Yeah, there's a pattern that kind of over a year's time that kind of fluctuates, and it pretty much stays around the same. But I think this year in particular, there's been a pretty significant reduction in a lot of the all the crime actually.
So as we talked a little bit about some of the better connectivity between, the various police departments in the community. One of the things that spurred my idea for this was prior to the COVID, you guys were doing Coffee with a Cop.
Oh yeah. We're going to be doing that again.
And what is that program? How's that look?
Yeah, basically it's just, finding a location like a McDonald's or a restaurant or it doesn't even have to be a restaurant. It can be any business, within a community, putting the advertisements out there and have an officer present so that they can meet and greet people and people within the community can come and have a cup of coffee with an officer. The last time I did one was a year ago or 2 years ago down at the McDonald's right down here on, in Evansdale. So, and that was me in person and I might go or maybe a lieutenant or somebody on a ship crew might go and, just talk to people.
Were they well attended?
Mine wasn't, but there are ones that are. I know that in the past we've had them at the Saberton McDonald's, and those usually get pretty good turnout for those.
Yeah, I think it's a terrific idea, really. I think it's just an absolutely great idea just to maintain that connectivity and grow that connectivity. Anything for the holidays at the police marginal, is there any kind of toy drives or anything that's going on that
we usually participate in a toy drive through the Marine Corps that they do the drop and we try to help with that. We always do a coordinated effort with the girls' basketball team sometime around this time of year. We do stuffed animals and have the girls' basketball team will bring them to a game and distribute them to the fans. And that has, I think it's attached to a charity, but I couldn't tell you which one off the top of my
head. Yeah, that's okay, yeah. So as we move forward here a little bit, what are some of the things that you're doing as the current chief of police that may be pushing the department in a particular direction or anything? Or what are your upcoming plans for the department?
Well, right now we've got a really great program that we're implementing. We're getting the officers just now starting to get their training in it. It's called a CIT program or a CIT response team. And basically, what CIT stands for is crisis intervention. And it's sort of a part of an overall effort to coordinate our responses with respect to individuals that might be experiencing some type of crisis, whether it be a mental illness or a substance abuse issue. These officers are going to be trained by national recognized experts in the field, and they're going to sort of be embedded within the already existing patrol arm of the department. Their role is going to be if a call can be identified off the top of the bat by a MECA or a call taker as being something that might be related to one of these crises taking place, those officers would be the primary officers responding. They'd be dressed sort of like I'm dressed today. I know nobody can see, but I'm dressed in sort of a polo shirt and some khakis, very dressed down. Obviously, they're going to
more still, approachable, almost
more approachable. Mm-hmm. They're going to still maintain their safety, protocols with vests and firearms and maybe a secondary sort of intermediary weapon like a taser or pepper spray or something. But beyond that, the goal is to make a connection with this person in crisis, and really, ultimately, we're wanting a whole group of people to be involved. We want social workers, psychiatric workers, anyone in the field that could offer them some kind of help that goes beyond just slapping cuffs on them and mm-hmm. taking them to jail. Sort of dealing with the problem cause more so than the end result. So getting them to the right place, getting to them to where they're not to the right people that can help them rather than, because I think that's one of the big jibes or, the thing that people have about the police right now and it's a fair criticism that we're really basically just arresters and we don't really try to solve the problem. We just address the problem. And we dress it in a single sort of way. So we're trying to get diversified and reach out and create more of a community connection. And I'm really looking forward to it because it's all coming at a great time when we have, a sobering center. We've got a really good facility located up at the old Ramada site, the Hazel's House of Hope, I think is what it's called now. But there's a lot of social services being relocated up there. And in a single place, as well as the pre-existing psychological facility that was out in that general area as well, and I just think it's going to go a long way to addressing a lot of issues like houselessness and vagrancy and things like that. Open use of drugs and
well, time will tell. Certainly, yeah, I mean, time will be the arbiter of truth on without a doubt. So we'll see how that plays out. I'm certainly hopeful as well myself on those ends.
Yeah.
So one of the unique things I know you guys have done down there recently was the interrogation room. Okay. How has that changed? Because I think this is a really neat idea, and I think it kind of shows that forward thinkingness of the particular department in trying to do these types of things.
Yeah, it's that's a great thing that not a lot of departments are starting to copy it now. But we had a couple of officers take the initiative, did a lot of research with it. We happened to have the space available to accommodate what they
And so what was it do. Previously as opposed to what it is now?
It was formerly where we housed our special services unit, SSU. Those would be traffic guys, guys that deal with parades and special events and things like that. And we moved their office to a different location. We took the space that they left and, you know, basically turned it into what's referred to as a soft interview room. And it's just basically, you know, a lot of people think of an interview room in a police as being very sterile, you know, four walls, a chair and a table, and that's about it. They recognize that, you know, for certain crimes and certain victims, it was much better to have sort of a more warm and engaging kind of atmosphere while they were conducting these interviews, because it made them feel a lot more comfortable and helped them open up a little bit. And it's just, it looks like somebody's living room, basically. Really nice furniture, really nice lighting. It's a really nice little area, and it's really helped a lot in helping us resolve a lot of these sexual assault, domestic violence issues that we deal with.
By just changing the environment a little bit. And I think it's really a great idea. I happen to know one of the officers that was involved in spearheading that a little bit. And so I just wanted to highlight that a little bit, because it is forward thinking. And I think it shows a kinder, gentler hand sometimes than the police department gets credit for on those things.
Yeah. And I tell you what, I'm the chief, but I really rely on my officers for these kinds of things, because, you know, if somebody has a passion about something or is really interested in something, they're going to put everything they have into it. And mm-hmm. that was just the case with the interview. It's the case with the crisis intervention team. We had one officer that really picked it up, rolled with it, and, you know, went and got other officers interested in it. And it really, I think it has the potential of really being successful because of the kind of interest and the kind of commitment people showed towards it.
Now, is that program launched, or is it currently in the staging?
Right now, we're going to implement our part of it. It's part of sort of a multiple kind of effort. But we're working on having ambassadors, and we're working on the city as a whole, getting people on staff that have that sort of background in social services a little bit, so that they can kind of be part of that whole team effort. But initially it's going to be our officers, because we just have the people in place already and we're getting the training already, and so we're going to implement it, but with the other things to be added as they come online. You know,
I like that a lot. I think it goes back to what you said, you know, the police officer is still people at the end of the day. Exactly. And showing that care, you know, a lot of times we don't know, but their initiative for those kind of things is spurred out of something that maybe happened in their own family.
Sure.
So once again, it goes back to showing that care and kindness that right. We kind of miss.
Excellent. So one of the main things as I look into the holidays here is I think there's a propensity for crime to start to spike just a little bit around this time of year with burglaries, home invasions, and various other crimes. Have you seen that statistically in our area?
I think I wouldn't go so far as the home invasion type incidents, but definitely burglaries, definitely the petty thefts, things like things being stolen out of cars, things being stolen off of porches.
Porch privates.
That does increase considerably. And obviously there's a lot more activity as far as, you know, things being delivered to people's houses. And so my advice to people is always if you can, and you're not going to be a way to receive a gift or a package, and you know you're getting one, make arrangements to have it delivered to your neighbor, or make arrangements to come pick it up at the, you know, at whatever facility that you can pick it up, or reschedule it for a time that you are going to be home, so it's not sitting on your porch until you get home from work.
Yeah, surely they're enticing. The video doorbells, though, have they slowed that down at all? I mean, it would deter me if I was.
You would think it would deter people, but it really doesn't. Surprisingly,
yeah. I mean, because now in an instant, you're on everybody's Facebook page and you can't help but be seen.
But I always encourage people to get them, because it makes our job a lot easier. If we have a good video of somebody, it really helps. And
you know whose job it makes harder?
In commission of the crime.
Right. Right. Yeah.
Makes realtors' jobs harder, though.
Yeah. Yeah, a little bit. So.
Yep.
Any other tips or anything you can tell people this time of year that they should be on the lookout for?
Well, and there's probably a little increase in phone scams. I know that recently there's been some scams that have started to increase a good bit, as well as just internet scams. So I would just be very vigilant about the types of calls that you're, you know, entertaining. I myself do not answer if I think it's even a remotely could be a call, a solicitation call, or a fake call. I don't even answer
them. I answer every single phone call.
I do too.
I mean, I answer every phone call that comes in,
even if it says spam risk.
Yeah,
I let them leave me a message.
You know, one of the things I brought up the other day. So currently, Zach and I both are on the Board of Realtors Safety Committee, and you know, so I'd mentioned the other day that, you know, because sometimes burglaries increase this time of year, for realtors to be a little bit more vigilant about showing occupied houses, that, yeah, you know, they could very well walk into a situation. Most home invasions take place between 10 a.m. and 3 p.m. classically. So if you're showing homes during that time, people think that the owner may be away. And so you may actually walk into something.
Right. And I will stress this as well. I remember when I was on patrol, it was always a really great idea for you to develop a relationship with people that are in the neighborhood all the time, like people that are working in the neighborhood, mailmen, people that see things during the day, during their routine. And I encouraged, you know, made sure that they had means of contacting me directly if they saw something that was out of place or that didn't make sense. And I always tell people too, and this applies really generally in general, don't let people into your home if you don't know who they are.
Absolutely.
Yeah, you think you wouldn't have to make that.
Yeah, it seems like an obvious thing, but you'd be surprised, you know. Just be very vigilant about allowing people to see what's in your home. If you don't know who they are, just make very just take every precaution.
And maybe not advertise that brand new television you got by putting the empty box out on your curb to tell everybody you just got a brand new giant flat screen television.
That's a good point.
That's right.
You know, there's various things like that. And I think as agents, and I certainly, because it's kind of in my line of sight all the time, those are things that I would tell my clients if I was going to be showing their home, to help protect my own safety and their safety too. You know, maybe be careful about what you put out on your curbside for your garbage, because you're telling the world what you have inside your house.
And with Christmas around the corner, people have a habit of putting their tree up in the middle of a really big picture window so everyone can see the nice tree, but they can also see all the gifts around.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
And then you've got the other aspect of that is the windows themselves. If you have windows that are sort of ground level and are very easily accessible, try to keep them visible from the road rather than have them covered by bushes or something in front where people can get in behind and not be seen. Or trim them so that you can see, you know, the house itself. Those are just standard sort of safety precautions.
But those are good to prevent home invasions and burglaries. Right. And I have told people over years that even the type of plant that you plant there, some are far less friendly to be in. Like a holly bush is no fun to be in.
That's
know what I mean? And so actually using the shrubbery to help defend your home a little bit.
Yeah, definitely.
I'm sure there's tons of great tips like that we could probably think of forever. But that's some pretty good information there. And so the idea is be safe during the holidays. You know, have a great time, but be a little bit vigilant and you know, take your own safety into account to some degree, you know, and just be smart.
Take it easy on the eggnog.
Okay, there you go. So I'm going to ask one question too. I don't know if you guys want to wrap up, but, and you know, like Aaron said, we're on the safety committee. If there's any kind of tips you might be able to give to realtors, something, you know, like yesterday, for example, we did a flashlight safety video. It's one of the easiest things to carry.
Yeah, it's expected to be it's in expected, the situation.
Yeah. I mean, it's an amazing tool.
You know, one of the things that I talk about, because I do some of this stuff, you know, I carry a 1,000 lumen flashlight, because I know not only do I need it administratively, but I can use it in various ways to defend myself as a force multiplier or just to gain that little bit of advantage by causing some temporary flash blindness.
Yeah, sure.
You know, so
that's a great advice. Yeah.
Any quick tips you might give us?
Gee,
on the spot.
I would always encourage realtors to make sure people know where you are. Like if I would never schedule a showing of a house without someone else knowing, hey, I got something going on here at this time.
Yep. You know?
I can't think of anything else off the top of my head other than just being very vigilant. Look for things that you pay attention to what's going on. A car that pulls up that you know might not fit or a group of people coming up that may not, you'd be wondering, well, why would they be wanting to
sure,
that
yeah.
house, things like that. And take note of things like license plates whenever you, that kind of suspicion does get riled in you. And because a lot of times I think what happens is people do the real thing that could happen there is someone's casing the house ahead of time and they're just wanting to get the information or get the basic layout so they know they're not
nowhere to go. Yeah.
They're not fumbling around and things. And they may have been watching the house for a while anyway to get schedules. And so you just pay attention to things like that. Just, you know, if somebody's jotting down notes,
yeah,
know,
that's
while,
it.
While they're walking around in the yeah. house, you know,
right. Being situationally aware. We say exactly, this all the time. Yeah. And I think this makes a lot of sense. You know, an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, sure. You know, so, you know, yeah. just keep your eyes open and pay attention to your surroundings.
Yeah. No, I think that's a good point too. I mean, they're simple things, but they're things we maybe miss. Like you said, looking at a license plate. Yeah. Hey, that was out of state.
Right.
You know,
even something as, as simple as that, just that it goes a long way to helping, just finding a car later.
Yeah. And even this time of year when you're showing homes, there's a lot of people that are traveling, you know, so you have family members who are coming in and you may know that family that you're showing their house and they may be really great people, but maybe their brother-in-law is not so great and he's at the house now staying, right. You know, so there's a lot of things to be extra vigilant, especially for realtors this time of year to, you know, just kind of keep your eyes wide open a little bit and pay attention to your surroundings. And right. if it's out of the ordinary, maybe question it a little bit further.
Right.
All right, well, that's terrific. Well, it was great talking to you today. Those are some great things, and I hope everybody's enjoyed getting a chance to meet our new chief of police down here. And
do you have a date for the next coffee with a cop?
Not yet. Okay. I'll probably be working with our communications officer,
Andrew.
Andrew Stacy, about that here pretty soon. It should be starting up pretty soon. I'm also kind of excited about we're going to be rolling out a new website here within the next month or so. It's going to be a dedicated website rather than having it be a page on the city's website. Yep. It's going to be totally dedicated to the police department. And there's going to be a lot of great information on there that we're going to be able to share with people. So look for that coming up in the near future.
Well, Chief Powell, I tell you, I think the department's going to do well under your leadership. It seems like things are moving in a great direction. I'm glad to see it. A hometown guy here, you know, actually taking charge of, you actually have roots here, and I think it's absolutely fantastic. And I think that's a great statement towards that connectivity between the police department and the community. And I say it all the time, you can just live somewhere or you can be part of the community. So I'd encourage everybody out there to look for that Coffee with a Cop program, get that connectivity, and get to know the people in your neighborhood like that. So,
well, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Awesome. So quick plug for our location today, the Antiquity Tea House and Coffee House over here on University Avenue has provided some great space over here. They got great coffees and teas and pastries and so forth. And you certainly should check those guys out over here. Great, great place.
Very good. We'll be right back.